You are listening to the Breaking the Spell podcast, hosted by Zuzanna Berendt
and Anna Majewska.
The podcast consists of four episodes, which are the harvest of the artistic research process conducted in the framework of the Breaking the Spell project. The podcast emerged from the archiving practice, which we developed during the project.
Each episode combines conversations and sound contributions prepared by the Breaking the Spell participants. And now, we turn it over to Marta Kyle, the curator of the project.
My name is Marta Kyle, and I would like to introduce you to the Breaking the Spell. It's been a pilot step of the artistic research project that reflected practices of thinking with and being with in performing arts, and researched spells as political and artistic practices, stemming from the moment of an overwhelming exhaustion, it attempted to understand how to make art in between the ends of the world. Together with a group of art workers, we have been looking for feminist strategies to re-enchant ways how we work and how we maintain transnational alignments. For a year and a half, in 2022 and 2023, we gathered in four European cities, being hosted by Residenz Schauspiel in Leipzig, Munich Kammerspiele, Innsbruck Performing Arts Institute in Warsaw, and Vier Nul Vier in Ghent. What you will listen to is by no means a result of this journey, as we feel it has only started. We are rather offering a glimpse into our exchanges, questions, struggles, and joys, with hope to become many in re-enchanting the ways we do things, in the art and far beyond.
In this episode, we will be talking about the position of Ukrainian and Polish artists, curators, and researchers in the international art world. The conversation was recorded in Warsaw. It continues the discussion which already started during the meeting between Breaking the Spell participants and members of the Sunflower Solidarity Community Center. During the conversation, artists, activists, curators, and researchers discuss about the notion of Eastern European peripherality, talk about their individual experiences of working internationally as Eastern Europeans, and speculate about the colonial transnational alignments that enable us to share knowledge and resources. In the conversation took part Maria Beburia, Marta Jalowska, and Julia Krivic. It was moderated by Anna Majewska. The performative commentaries to our conversation were created by Alicja Czyczel and Agata Maszkiewicz.
Hi, my name is Maria. Thank you for inviting us to this podcast. I'm from Odessa, Ukraine, but I've been living in Warsaw for 10 years. And for recent years, I've been working in Museum of Modern Art in Warsaw, but for the last, 2 years, I've been mostly working in NGO, and I identify myself as social worker mostly, and after that, some kind of artistic person. I've been working with topic of accessibility of institutions of culture for people with migrant and refugee experience for a couple years now. Last year, after 24th of February, me together with Julia and our friends, we created a community solidarity center, Słonecznik, Sunflower, in the building of Museum of Modern Art, but maybe about that we'll talk more later.
I'm Marta, and I'm working in performing arts. I'm coming from theater, but now I think I'm working also on a choreographical field. I'm mostly doing feminist and queer work. I also work as an NGO in Poland. I have my association. I'm a part of Alliance for Black Justice in Poland, which is a new association. It's more collaboration of associations than association to fight against discrimination and racism.
Hi, my name is Julia Krivic. I'm an artist, organizer, and most recently curator. I have been living in Warsaw since 12 years, and also together with Maria, we co-created and set up actually the center of solidarity center for Ukraine refugees, refugees in general, in the building of the museum. And also I co-organize and co-create different projects related to migration before that. And all my practice concentrate on the topic of migration and post-colonial theory and language.
I'm Anna Majewska. Today I'm a moderator, but also I will participate in a conversation. I'm a curator of artistic research processes and a researcher of in performing arts. My current research involves post-human studies, and I'm also working right now on a research project on various practices of collective knowledge creation in Polish performative arts. I would like to ask you at the beginning about how you perceive your specific position as Polish or Ukrainian curators and artists in the context of international cooperation. What are your experiences? Is there something specific in this sort of Eastern European positionality in that context for you? You can base that answer on your own experiences, but also you can refer to the other people that you know from Poland or Ukraine and their experiences.
If we're talking about this, I would say, precarious position of being from, I'm putting air quotes here, East. So I would say that I come like from East like a couple of times. First of all, Ukraine as Eastern border, being on Eastern border of Poland, but again, also Poland being in Eastern Europe. In my experience with like Western partnerships, for example, Museum of Modern Art is also part of Confederation of European Cultural Institutions called El Internazionale, in which there's also this element of knowledge exchange and experience exchange of how this institution work. It took us quite some time to put our, also again, message about, for example, migration situation in Poland, migration situation in Warsaw, and particularly how people with migrant experience culture or participate in culture. But again, now, when we're talking about like in 2023, this position also is obviously changed after 24th of February, about after the full-scale invasion by Russia of Ukraine, where this position of being from Ukraine, even though living in Poland for some quiet time, I feel responsible to explain, educate my Western colleagues about what is happening, and also to just, yeah, like basically educate them. A lot of people have very basic knowledge, or maybe no knowledge at all, about what is happening on the in the Eastern Europe and what is happening in Ukraine, even if we're talking about this Western leftist community, which is sometimes a little bit just like in space and have like all their imaginations about Eastern Europe, and they just have like this colonial Western gaze. Sometimes, yeah, we would, I don't know, fight about something where like I or my colleagues, my friends would try to explain something. But also sometimes those people from the Western European countries would have like this very patronizing view on people from Ukraine, and also like doing everything about themselves, kind of.
I just want to talk about this term, Eastern Europe. What does it mean?
Mm-hmm.
This is, I think, very important starting this conversation, because recently I just understood, not recently, actually, I understood it like quite fast after the invasion last year, that we need like new glossary, we need some kind of new vocabulary to explain some things. For example, I can't use this term of post-Soviet countries right now. For me, it's like, I just can't, all the time I try to explain, you know, these countries, so-called Soviet, from Soviet space, or post-Soviet countries. But what does it mean after 2022? So, and the same with the Eastern Europe. What does it mean, Eastern Europe? Is it geographically Eastern Europe? Because geographically, I think Poland is quite central Europe.
But I was thinking about it also when you said that you have to explain something to Western colleagues. And what does it mean, Western? Is it to mm-hmm. Polish also? Because, you know, Poland is on the west from mm-hmm. from Ukraine. And mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people didn't understand anything, what is happening. Like, they started to educate themselves.
And also, thank you for mentioning that maybe we should somehow define how I understand Eastern Europe, because for me there are many Eastern Europes.
Yes.
And it's literally Poland, Ukraine, we might be somehow in a similar position, but also there are many important differences. Mm-hmm. When we're speaking about Central Europe, I don't really like that differentiation, mm-hmm. because for me it was born when countries like Czech Republic and Poland were trying to distance themselves from East.
Yeah.
And also like trying to pretend that they're getting closer to the West, you know, becoming those who are somehow richer in this very like colonial terms of speaking, more civilized. There's this like,
and free from Russia.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So for me this distinction between Central Europe and Eastern Europe is somehow fake, and it's also kind of aspirational.
Mm-hmm.
And this differentiation between West and the East, which is obviously a sort of constructed binary, is for me important to emphasize now, because it was created in very colonial terms, in a way in which the Western Europe was constructed as the one who is civilized, who is mm-hmm. rational, who's modern, while the East was being presented as uncivilized, not modern enough. And in a way Poland is still trying to catch up with those who are modern, and we're still not enough European, not enough educated. There's still this sort of complex, but I also get this like sort of very complex problem, because we have to make visible the divide between West and East, South and North, mm-hmm. and at the same time not strengthen them. Not like it's a problem of how to stop perceiving world in binary terms, but also avoid the situation in which we just pretend that they don't exist, and that practice of pretending makes the discrimination even worse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's for me a big challenge, because it's not that I would like to split the world, and it's mm-hmm. obviously so much more complicated,
yeah,
as
yeah.
you said, mm-hmm. but also what we have to do is really make those distinctions visible,
mm-hmm.
because we have to approach the discrimination, the racisms that are there, which are not visible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why I'm trying not to put here this word Central Europe.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you for mentioning that.
I'm just trying to understand it's in the sense of we talked about it a lot with my friends, and we used to talk a lot we continue to talk about this context of Eastern Europe, or especially with my friends who live in Western Europe. And of course they see this difference, but at the same time we could, in the terms of living in Germany, for example, there is you always feel that you are kind of different from, as you mentioned, this aspiration of Western civilized society, you know, that you come from somewhere where you are not enough for that. And I heard from my friends who live in Germany this term of Slavophobia, and how it implemented in a discourse also about Eastern Europe. Kind of interesting fact, because also there is some interdependencies which are in a situation, for example, of Ukrainian migration to Poland. Even before the full-scale invasion, and there was a huge wave of migration, like every mostly year. The same situation is, and Ukrainian migrants always were perceived in Poland as somewhere who work on the, let's say, less qualified works. And the same happening with, for example, Polish migrants in Western Europe. So it's kind of independence which goes from, you know, this more far east to more this west direction.
Yeah, I would say that what you're talking about was very, very visible, and you could feel it in those years, like after 2014. The Ukrainian migrants were discriminated basically, like on daily basis by Polish society. In the meantime, while Polish migration to London, to United Kingdom was like obvious fact, even though most of the Polish diaspora in London and United Kingdom also tended to be in like these little communities, Polish communities, and just stick together. Like, this is the thing that we could solidarize on together, because it's like very experience which is different but similar. The experience of migration for like this Western world to earn some money and to send it back home to their family. But again, but it could have been uniting, but it was like very put a lot of distance. And I remember in those years, for me, sometimes was very difficult to, like, it again, it just my, like, it was just my internal classism and etc. that for me it was sometimes difficult to say that yes, I'm from Ukraine, because sometimes it would be easier to pretend that you're from Poland, just in case, to make a distance. But also what I wanted to say in regards to this conversation earlier, that Ukraine is like in this very specific spot where like it has huge aspirations, like those Western aspirations, while it still is looked down by Western countries. Meanwhile, it tries to separate itself from this Russian colonialism, and it's basically in between those like empires, trying to exist. I would say that this is very specific spot.
Sound has an extraordinary power to evoke memories, and radio charts years later can be listened to as documents of their time, recalling social moods and political tensions. Agata Maszkiewicz has prepared her list for us, through which she talks about how she is situated between the East and the West. The artist was born in Poland, but has lived in France for years and creates her choreographic works there. Enjoy her chart.
It's 1989. I'm 8. June. The first partly free parliament elections take place. November. Berlin Wall collapses. But in my memory, this year is marked by one song and a dance. A dance that I was learning from a clip with my best friend Dorota, practicing together a figure eight with our buttocks, feeling the wind of change coming from the West. On the 21st October 89, Lambada by Kaoma was number one on the Polish Public Radio 3 chart, which, to the contrary to the Western charts, was based not on sales but on the votes of the radio listeners. Initially, everyone could call or send a letter with a choice of one Polish and one foreign song that was aired at the Radio 3 program at least once. In the meantime, the number grew to 10 songs, and since 96, the voting system moved to the internet. I live now in France, and to my knowledge, such a chart has never existed here. But Lambada, produced by a French-Brazilian group Kaoma, was as well a major hit here in summer 89, reaching number 2 of the top sales of the year. Cause like in other Western countries, the music charts were and are ruled here by a capitalistic logic. But let's come back to the Radio 3 chart. For the first time, it was aired in April 82, so deep behind the Iron Curtain, and the list was run by Marek Niedźwiecki. the number one on that day was this song. While in France, on the top of the hit parade in April was Flash in the Night by Secret Service. We move a bit in time, and in 2000 in France, the yearly hit was Mojo, Lady Hear Me Tonight, which didn't appear at all on the Polish chart, where Rind Kazik with the song Cztery Pokoje. The last chart of Radio 3 has been broadcasted on 15th of May 2020 with a top one Polish song again by Kazik, Your Pain Is Better Than Mine.
Zamknięte cmentarze to na skutek zdarzeń ostatnich tygodni, ostatnich wydarzeń. Na łańcuchy patrzę, ocieram łzy, tak jak i ty.
In this song, Kazik criticizes Jarek Kaczyński for visiting the Powązki Cemetery in Warsaw on the 10th anniversary of the Smoleńsk catastrophe. While the cemetery was officially closed to ordinary people due to the COVID pandemic, the chart with that winning song was cancelled by the management of the public Radio 3 station that made a statement that the votes were fabricated. As a result of this incident, Marek Niedźwiecki and almost all of the journalists have left the Radio 3 station. I still wonder which wind brought that change. The number one song on French sale charts in that time was this one, Say So by Dojo Cat, and I must say, I have never heard it before. Postscriptum. There is one song that without a doubt was the top one of most of the charts 30 years ago, in 90s, in Poland and in France, and still is for me, no matter if I'm in the West, from East, or from Central Europe.
It's been 7 hours and 15 days since you took your love away. I go out every night and sleep.
Thank you. It already opened a lot of topics that I hope will continue. But I wanted to ask Marta, how you see your positionality in international cooperation in the context of your practice?
Yeah, I'm thinking a lot about it. And when I was preparing for this, for our meeting, I was thinking what the East is, like Julia said. And I have that experience, which I think it was a few times that I realized that the so-called Western Europe, when they, for example, invite me or my feminist collective or people from here to collaboration, they invite us because of additional points for Eastern, more Eastern artists. And for them, what was interesting during the project which we...
Sorry to interrupt you. Additional points in the sense that you had more chances to get the application because...
Yes. And we've been one of the partners in a project called Women Performing Europe. And during work on this project, which was... It was four countries, Italy, Denmark, Germany and Poland. I realized that for many Western artists, East means Poland because Czech and Slovakia, they are more modern. So they are in the middle, they are more central. Behind Polish border, there's no European Union, so there is no Europe, you know, and it was really visible that the only East is somehow Poland, and there is nothing behind, and maybe Russia is behind, and the other countries, like maybe one more Eastern country, is Hungary, because they are, like we said, they are right wing country. They are in the. I had that feeling that in the Western perspective, they are far, far behind the civilization, because they are right wing, because they are not so.
They are too infanterable of European Union.
Yeah, yeah.
Poland and Hungary.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had that feeling that East is here, and I think that what we also discovered with Teraz Polish, my collective, after this full-scale invasion, that when in this NGO field, when many grants appears for Ukrainian artists, it was that a lot of Polish organizations started to invite Ukrainian artists, which was okay, but what was not okay, it was like treating them as the ones who needs our help to work, to create. Yes, yes, totally.
Yeah, the situation with Grande, I think that it's ending with last year, mostly, unfortunately. And I understand why Polish institution or Eastern European institution wanted to get this grant, because they perceive themselves as a kind of connectors, kind of people, you know,
yeah,
the space where, for example, Ukrainians can come and they can help them, and then in the same time finance their programs and their project, which is part of their activity. So
yes,
it's like, you know, complex thing.
Maybe adding on what you meant, this is from my position. Speaking to a lot of my Polish colleagues who are studying abroad, art or curatorial studies, this is somehow contrary to what you said. They talk that when it comes to financial support, Polish artists are not really perceived as people coming from a country that is not able to provide them with a scholarship, for example. Like many of my friends are perceived as Western students, which in fact ends up for them, like, sometimes they get homeless, really, starting their studies, which to some extent doesn't see the difference in the economical position between Eastern and Western countries, which is a big issue for me, especially as a curator working with the problems of the ecology, the climate crisis, and feminism in Poland, which are the topics that never get granted. You, Marta, also can confirm that because of the political reasons and because of the agenda of the ruling Conservative Party. And we basically have to maintain this sort of practice for free. And our only option is to cooperate with Western partners, really. So for me, it was always both a struggle and a joy to reach out to Western partners. A struggle maybe because of this very weak position of being the one who can't really provide any fundings, the one who always needs the support, who's not self-sufficient, really, who is not usually involved in a big institution, because the big institutions now are hiring very conservative curators and artists. So for me, that was a big problem. For example, if you want to join a curators network without an institution, you are in a very precarious position. You usually don't have anything to offer in a material way. And this, like, material, like what you can put in, the space, the money, is usually something that gives you the place in a certain community. So that was a big problem for me. You might, Marta, you want to add something?
Yeah, I'm thinking. I'm thinking just like, because on one hand it is good to have this Eastern partner. Yes, that's true. But I totally agree with you, because by But when I meant that it's valuable to have this Eastern partner means that you will get the grant, but then you have to you have the money. And for example, when you travel from Poland to Denmark, then you cannot afford anything. Like, even though you have the same amount of money, like when they come to Poland, they can like easily pay for accommodation and food and everything. And like to travel from here to there. It's much harder because for us it's super expensive to live in the Western countries and not so affordable. So yeah, it's like I think it's both and it's connected somehow. Even though if we get the grant and if we are part of collaboration, our situation is harder because for example, when you are one of the partners, then you are organizing also the events in your country. And for us, it was super hard to organize this. We were organizing workshops because we couldn't afford to organize a festival. And we were organizing workshops for people who identify themselves as a woman. And it was really hard to get the money for it. We mostly paid from our budget. I mean our own budget, not the budget of our organization, because we didn't have it. So yeah, we host the foreign guests and it was amazing, and it was the workshops went really good, but it was really a huge effort for us to do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's true.
I also wanted to ask you, coming back to the issue of educating others, what are maybe like not the key things, but some important knowledge that you really would like to have your partner to have about your position?
Mm-hmm.
To maybe wrap it up, like what are the most important points for you, which like if your partner would know that would really make a cooperation easier about your positionality and about the relation between East and West.
I wanted to say, like before we will dive mm-hmm. in, like two things. Like first of all, that in this situation, the educating is always a responsibility of the oppressed, not the oppressor. And this is something that we've been dealing with like a lot, that is like we have like all this additional work of educating, like as a woman we have like this constant work of educating men about feminism, which is like doesn't stop. It's like every day. And I feel like that also us as like Easterns, like we have like this work that we produce for free.
I always have this impression, had, and I think still have some, but we done a lot during last year, I think. And we done a lot since actually 2014, but I always meet with this kind of perception of Eastern Europe, it's something like a big Russia. You know, in a sense, not it's a country Russia, right? But it's kind of state of mind and this kind of exoticization, all those, you know, role like post-Soviet aesthetic, which was very trendy.
Yes.
I don't know, 2014, actually, 2015. So this kind of exoticization of being from East, so it's blocks, Hopnik style, blah, blah, blah. But in a sense of education, if we're talking about education, you try to explain, for example, that what the difference of Ukrainian and Russian language? Or are you speaking Russian or speaking the same language? No, it's not the same language. Also about Soviet Union, what Soviet Union was actually, from the perspective of, for example, German perspective, it probably is something that they had this kind of imaginary of Soviet Union and something that was opposite of Western colonialism, you know? Mm-hmm. And right now we try to explain it all the time. try to emphasize or try to like educate them in this field, for example. And also I just wrote this kind of key points, big Russia, Soviet Union, Russian Empire, yeah, and how they perceive what is Russia, what Russia is, and in the context of culture. This is the most important thing that we try to deal with, explaining that the Russian culture actually is a mostly, not everything, but mostly is a culture of
exploitation.
Exploitation and
appropriation.
Appropriation, yes. I think this is one of the most important issues when you try to explain or educate right now to Western colleagues.
I mean, the list of what of the stuff we educate them about, it just goes on and on and on. Like starting like all those things that Yulia said, but also because we mainly are in like this leftist artistic circles communities, and like the question is like if you're leftist and you're anti-fascist, then you should be a pacifist. And this is this thing that we've been saying for like more than a year, that like the pacifism is a privilege and the real anti-fascists are in the Ukrainian army right now. And this is like the key thing that I feel like we try to put this message, spread the world. But also I feel there's like also a lot of misconceptions about like us and Russians who oppose the war, and like the thing that like this is such a complicated topic, but what Western countries doing right now, they still like celebrate Russia, but like not the Putin Russia, but the Russia of like this free Russia. I'm putting air quotes all the time here. The Russia that is going to be free from the Putin, from like all this Kremlin propaganda, then it's going to be okay. But never mind, like there's still imperialist, colonialist mindset about how they still want those territories that are occupied by Russia. Like, and I feel like this is like one of the, yeah, like as I said, like misconception why we have like different agendas.
You will now hear an audio contribution from Alicja Czyżel. She is an artist and activist who cooperated with the Sunflower Solidarity Community Center. In her choreographic practice, she combines working with movement and voice. She prepared her contribution for the Breaking the Spell podcast a few days after the brutal bombing of the Ukrainian city of Odessa by the Russian military.
Thoughts travel through the Ukrainian land is to sing. I'm sitting in a car. It's raining heavily. My attention moves in time and space. It soaks grief, anger, despair, strength, solidarity, and hope of so many Ukrainians. I live nearby, but far enough to feel safe. I hear Ukrainian language on many streets of Warsaw these days. I can't imagine how does it feel to bear the invasion in one's body. I can only sing because the sky is already crying.
So I wanted to ask you how you understand decolonizing Russia, what that means for you, what has to be done for this country to be decolonized, and what really has to be also done in the decolonial theory in the context of the East.
So decolonized Russia, it's first of all, it's understanding that Russia is still is empire mindset. And in Soviet Union, it was the same. It was empire mindset. It was still empire. So I think this is something that it's missed in discourse, in global discourse, of what this part of world experienced during last centuries. I mean, not just Ukraine, not just Eastern Europe, but also Central Asia, for example, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. kind of absolutely blind spot for Westerns right now. And the same with the indigenous people in Russia, so-called Federation. Mm-hmm. They experience discrimination being in their own country and discrimination of their culture, for example, appropriation of their culture in Russian so-called Federation. It's still existing, and it was.
I mean, if we're talking about like practical terms, that decolonizing Russia means to be given back the occupied land, and we're not talking about Ukraine, we're talking about Georgia, Ichkeria, and also the indigenous communities that live in Russia, and they like all have Russian citizenship. Mm-hmm. But as Yulia said, this the most important thing is understanding this colonial imperial structures, because in Soviet Union there was like this big myth of friendship of the nations, in which the Russian nationality was like the key figure, the one who like unites all of these uncivilized groups, minorities, who are like this, like they were even more Eastern than us. But thanks to like this good Russian people, Soviet people, we finally are together and all on the same level, and we can live happily. Meanwhile, like all the lands of this so-called post-Soviet countries are being exploited by the Soviet government, and the culture has been appropriated. And first of all, also the language, which was forced, like this common Russian language, which like screams like empire. And when we like, I feel like if we already decided that, yeah, empires are bad, maybe let's put also like this Russian empire to that list and also abolish it.
This is also interesting in the context of how we conceptualize racism, because the Soviet Union had this official agenda that mm-hmm. there is no racism in the Soviet Union, while it is in the West. But in fact, there were so many racist practices within this great empire, just starting with how the Roma people were treated and really exterminated
mm-hmm.
through many, many communities and identities which were destroyed.
Yeah, decolonize Russia, it means also give the voice and freedom to mm-hmm. those people who were exploited, not just during centuries history of Russian Empire and Soviet Union Empire, Soviet Union / Empire, but also those who, for example, as I already mentioned, Central Asia and Caucasus, which is also important part of imperial exploitation, Russian imperial exploitation in this region. So it's very complex and big issue, and it started from of course perception of Russian Federation right now, and goes to the practical decolonization of it, of its lands. But because of why I interrupt you in this reparation stuff, because it's not about reparations, it's not about decolonization. Reparation, it's what Russia done to Georgia or to Chechnya or to Ukraine, right? And it related to the war. But when we talk about decolonization, it's about perceiving those, mm-hmm. this is a country, Chechnya is a country with their own language, with their own culture. The same with Georgia, yeah? And when I talked about this concept of the Eastern Europe as a big Russia, this is kind of thing that we need to emphasize as a something is a false.
At this moment, our meandering conversation came back to the question, what would you like your foreign partners to understand about your position to make the cooperation better? Let's hear what Marta had to say about it.
I think that it's quite important to, I know it's hard, but every time that we are trying to collaborate, for example, we have to try to push it and to push the system, which not really includes these differences. For example, this, my experience is that this system of grants from European Creative Europe, it's called, I think, and many grants for artists, which is from European Union, they are treating us like you mentioned, that they're treating us like we are in the same situation in European Union, because European Union is European Union, not West, East, it's European Union. And it's not, as we said before. So I think it's super important also to, like from my perspective, it was super important also to give the message to the whole program of Creative Europe that it's not working really. When you treat our situation the same, even though we are coming from different countries and different angles. So this is kind of important thing. But the other important thing for me is to, it was for me to understand why I stayed in Poland, because it was huge, like when I was during my artist education, most of my friends just go to Germany, or mostly to Germany, to Berlin. Or I had that feeling that I stayed here because I'm not as good as them. And I'm staying in this Eastern Europe, I'm staying in Poland because maybe I'm not as good as them. So, and I think it's of course not true, but to understand why I stand in Poland and what is the mission behind it, and I think the what is behind this decision. And it's not only that I have friends here, because I also have friends in different countries, but it was a decision to stay here, and how to understand for myself and empower myself that I'm not worse than them. This is kind of a thing that it's still struggle for me when I'm participating in international projects. And sometimes, you know, that the language thing is super interesting, because I had that feeling that, for example, in my group, we are different generations. So we are from generation who was who had English lessons at school. And all, we also have girls who had Russian at school. Mm-hmm. So they learn English as an adult, and it's harder for them to speak in English. It's super hard for them. So we are, for example, during the common talks or workshops, we are translating to our languages, because people don't speak English. And it's still kind of a problem that some of the people don't speak English, you know, and this is perceived as an Eastern problem. Mm-hmm. I had that feeling, for example, which from my perspective, it's not a problem, but it's still that we are those who are not communicating so good, and we didn't have this education, and so on and so on.
Yeah, we have a very soundable accent.
Ah, yeah.
Which immediately, I remember reading recently a very interesting text about how you stop being white when someone hears your accent. It was about discrimination against Polish migrants in UK.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I also think that maybe works with Ukrainian migrants in Poland. They also experience racism just because of the way you sound like, of the accent. For a long time, I was also struggling with this inferiority complex. My first travels to the West, to some conferences or campuses for young curators, I always had this feeling that I'm not enough. Even if at first I was like, okay, so maybe they have easier access to the Western theory, which I don't have that much, even though I'm reading a lot, but or they have a different manner of speaking. At here at the universities, we're not really taught to speak that freely, or to listen really. So I was struggling with that at the very beginning. And then I had this moment of catching up, which I think is a general condition of Polish people and Polish left, especially, of catching up with the West, trying to be good enough to like learn all the critical theories which were published in the West and never translated into Polish. And all that knowledge that comes from the West as knowledge and a language of emancipation that you have to catch up with. And this feeling that nothing is being created here in that context, which is obviously not true. And at certain point, I discovered for myself that there is so much original emancipatory knowledge created here in Poland and created in the East, created in Ukraine. Something that I really, which is coming literally from my home, something which I learned from my mother that I was never appreciative of before that much, because I was trying to catch up. And now when I read like all the theories which make me feel comfortable in the relation with Western partners, I'm really ashamed that I didn't perceive that knowledge that I have from here as a valuable knowledge. So for me, it would be important for my partners to also perceive it like this, not only to perceive this as a space which they have to support because we don't have so much resources and so on and so on, but as a space where an original knowledge is created, a situated knowledge that we can share. And I think like you all do that in your practices. You all created such an interesting knowledges which are coming from a very specific context that we can share with our Western partners. So I would really love like to share and also to be treated as someone who has something to share.
I feel like you said very, very, very important thing about how in this catching up marathon, we forget about our local creative scholars who already been doing an amazing work and still doing this work. And I feel like this is our also job to amplify those voices and give the platform for them. And also because Western countries can learn a lot from that specific experience, as you said, because I feel like they've been just like stuck in their own bubble and not reacting to anything that's happening. Yeah, like somewhere there in the East. Meanwhile, the knowledge, the wisdom, like everything is being creating at the same time. And this is like our responsibility to bring that up and to share it with other people.
It's not only also about the scholars. It's
It's
about, of course,
No.
Also like, the knowledge that we create in communities.
Yes.
Yeah, but also the academic knowledge too.
Yeah, we're talking about academic knowledge all the time because we feel like there is a, as I said, this explaining what the gap, what the problem. For example, this academic knowledge is also very important because I think there's all those history theories and discourses, they're coming from this up academic knowledge. And if there are no in Yale, if there were no, for example, Timothy Snyder in Yale, who is promoting Ukrainian history, probably in United States there was a huge gap of understanding what's going on right now, you know? And we talking about this, that we need also these Ukrainian scholars, not just Timothy Snyder, who is not Ukrainian, but he's a professional in his field, of course, but he's not Ukrainian in the sense of understanding and being, having this own experience, but like to bring this knowledge to this head, to this top, you know, at least in history.
So I wanted to ask you at the end, you might be for a very short response to this, like the question that was supposed to be the title of this conversation, how to build alliances from a peripheral position. If you would answer that in a very short way, what would you say?
We would have to not hide from our differences, but concentrate on our like similarities and unifying experiences that we have, like in case of, for example, migration, which is, this is what I'm also taking back with me from like this conversation, like this situation of Polish migrants and Ukrainian migrants, because for me it's like something which has like this possibility of emancipation but was never been used. And now I'm also thinking about those alliances with those Eastern European countries that have suffered from Russian Soviet occupations, like Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, but also, as Yulia said, a lot about countries of Central Asia, but also Caucasus, like Georgia, which Georgia right now can be also qualified as the Eastern Europe, yes, if we're talking about like the values, the aspirations. So I feel like we need to find all these elements of the solidarization in on which we can like build our alliances.
I think that we should spend more time together, like by spending this time for real and get to know each other more, like listen to each other and listen what we want to and like you said about this, the other countries which are even more east than Poland is. So I think to not only try to fix everything fast by the money, but try to spend the time together to exchange the energy and exchange the motivations and the own history, which is in us, in our bodies and practice, to create maybe the fields that allow us to be together.
I totally agree with this kind of spending time together. I had this experience last year when I traveled a lot And I understood that this kind of relations or connections they build in through the years, and it's like something that is most valuable. And for example, projects which were like will be around for some time between, for example, artists from Eastern Europe countries and Western Europe countries, could help building this connection and this alliances. And of course, I absolutely agree with Maria. This is our sunflower topic this year. We understood that where and how we can build these connections, and where we found solidarity last year, where we can find it in the future, where we share a common experience of the past. So this is very also important to build these alliances with the, not only with the past, but all those countries who, for example, experience the same. And we can also add and discover our, at the same time, similarities, but also differences.
Yeah, I also share that big strive for long cooperations, which are more processual than project-oriented, in which we really can develop attentiveness towards each other and really get the context. I will also, because for the last years I actually started working a lot internationally when the pandemic started. So basically, for a long time, I wasn't able to get to know the context of the people I was cooperating with, because we've been only meeting online. And also, I wasn't able to invite them. And there were so many also struggles with bringing people from the West to Poland to see the contexts, to share with them the knowledge that is here. So I would love to really, in a very long relationship, develop this sort of sharing. That would be ideal for me. But also I have this feeling that what we really need is not only enhancing the relationships with Western partners, but solidifying our relationships.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like within Eastern Europeans, those who identify themselves as certain as the Central Europeans too, but I still think they're just Eastern Europeans. So it's really needed right now. At some point, I think it started a lot between Polish artists and curators and Ukrainian artists and curators, even more the last year. And I think it's a super important step, and we really need that relationships if we want to bring Western partners. And it's also our strength to some extent, that we know each other, even though there are so many tensions from the past between Poland and Ukraine, which like I still try to make them visible in this conversation, and Polish racism against Ukrainians, not to like pretend that we speak the same voice, but also to some extent speak common voice.
Breaking the Spell project has been produced by Residenz Schauspiel Leipzig, Münchner Kammerspiele, Performing Arts Institute in Warsaw, and Filmnewfir in Ghent. It's been funded by the German Federal Culture Foundation and by the Federal Government Commissioner for Culture and the Media.